Welcome, my friends. We are back for episode 2 of the Inner World Podcast, and this one's going to be a lot better than the first one. And the first one was great, but I feel like we know what we're doing now. We have a vision. We have a vision of absolute victory. And this episode, like I teased before, we're going to talk about the Pelasgi or the Pelasgians. It's a concept that will really help you understand the overall shifting of pieces on the chessboard in the historical era that is so murky and concealed by the ancient authors, the Greeks, especially the church. So, Dylan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to, I'm very excited and impressed by your outline. I think a lot of really good stuff that you've kind of flushed out, and I can't wait for you to share it with me, especially some of the gematria encodes and all that stuff.
Oh, man. Since doing the Marvelous Demystifiers, gematria gets more and more significant. But you got to just not go too crazy with it. Pick a target and look for that. But I think that there's definitely fingerprints there. I think the most useful thing about gematria is how you can see why a word would be spelled one way in one language and another way in another language. Like the swap of the R to the N, you know, which is so weird because that's not really a phonetic thing. The way R and L can get confused by somebody's tongue and their palate. But N, what's that about? But if you have two N's, that's the equivalent of an R in gematria. And two N's make the same sound as one N. So the fin versus the fray, you know what I mean? 608 both ways.
And the Basque people, when you look at their ancient like Bibles, and or not ancient, but when you look at their old language of Bibles, they also, there's a lot of swapping between the L, the N, and the R. And so that the system, when it makes its way to Northwestern Europe, it changes. Like, you know how like it gets really philologically tricky. So it like really disguises itself if you don't know what to look for. Like, you know how when you look at some of those old English letters, the S in the, like the middle of a word looks kind of like an F, but it's not. Well, in Cornish, that's an E. There's like all kinds of weird stuff that I've been learning that I'm going to be publishing in articles coming up. So head over to my Substack for those of you who see this, if you're not already there. It's going to be a lot of weird, interesting gravy that we're expanding on. And what I loved about your notes is it's like you've taken some of the things that I've brought to the table and you've expanded on them. And so now it's a lot of it's going to be fresh even for me. And I'm excited to see you elaborate on some of these points.
Well, I really appreciate the lens that especially the new book, The Real Universal Empire, helps develop in somebody who's actually serious about comprehending history, because as you say all the time, the hoops that the academics have to jump through to make all this stuff come from Mesopotamia are a bit ridiculous, makes the whole thing confusing. But whenever you just start to refocus and you're like, okay, these are all one people centered probably in the middle of the Mediterranean, which would be Italy, makes a lot of sense, makes everything click. And with that lens going through, even what the mainstream says about the Pelasgi, like I was seeing fingerprints of the system being central to the Aegean and Italy area for sure.
And even in your notes, there was stuff that I don't think I know, or if I came across it, I've long forgotten, because you got to remember, like the Real Universal Empire, we kind of laid the foundation up for those of you who are new here. You'll want to dive into Chance's narrated this. So the Holy Sailors, it's in audiobook form as well. And Terminalia, it just came out on audiobook. And these are really great books that outline what we're going to be going into. And if we didn't have that framework, we wouldn't have been able to look at things differently. It's only when you see the bigger picture that you can start reorganizing your thoughts. And part of that is you have to be able to debunk forgeries. And there were certain forgeries that people debunked that also helped key us in on a lot of this stuff. But I'm, like I said, I'm excited just to even see some of the information I quickly read about the Pelasgians that you, I call them Pelasgians because it just doesn't make any sense. That that whole word is so rough. Like, it doesn't really, you don't really see the SG together with Greek as much, at least in what I've read in old manuscripts. And that G might be functioning as a C, which would kind of be giving it like that Pisces vibe, like the Pelasians. Like,
No, dude, it's the Bell Oskins.
Bell Oskin. Yeah. And guess what? That epiphany for me, people say Oskin, and I used to, but when I looked at it from like a Latin mindset, it's ocean, the ocean language.
There it is. Yeah, I love that. This wasn't even in the notes, but as soon as you get this lens, it all the pieces fall together. So jumping into the outline, we'll just start by defining the Pelasgi as the Encyclopedia Britannica describes them. So that says the Pelasgi, the people who occupied Greece before the 12th century BC. For context, the 12th century BC is what they call like the late Bronze Age or the Bronze Age collapse, where all these bronze artifacts come from that are baffling and intricate. So the Pelasgi were mentioned as a specific people by several Greek authors, including Homer, Herodotus, Thucydides, and they were said to have inhabited various areas such as Thrace, Argos, Crete, and Chalcidice. I'm not sure where that is.
When you see the Greek letters like that, it's usually going to be the K sound when you see the C sound, unless you're reading like Constantine, unless it's like a more modern, but it's a Chalcedon, I think is the Greek word for it. So just to give you reference, it's kind of the transliteration for Greek is really terrible, just like it is for Hebrew. It's one of the things I was noticing when I looked at and it's not your fault. It's just like that, how the letters are technically corresponding to each other. We pronounce those letters in English different than the way they are pronounced in those other languages. So,
right. Narrating an audiobook has taught me quite a lot about that. So according to Encyclopedia Britannica, in the 5th century BC, the surviving villages of Pelasgi apparently preserved a common non-Greek language. That's disputable. It is uncertain whether any ancient people actually called themselves Pelasgi. In later Greek usage, their name was applied to all aboriginal Aegean populations. And Homer called them Di Pelasgi, which means holy sailors or sailors of God, assuming Pelasgi means that. And we'll get into assuming Pelasgi means sailors. Di is obviously God. And we're going to get into more of the possible etymologies of that word or that title as we go.
And I brought my whiteboard because there's going to be some Hebrew things that we're not going to be able to show you guys unless you see it done, but specifically in the way certain things are spelled and the way they transliterate them in English. But when you look at we'll get there, but daddy's ready.
You know, it's serious when the whiteboard's coming out. So I think the first interesting part of the phonetic of Pelasgi has got to be the P-E-L, which I'm going to go ahead and link to Baal, B-A-A-L, which is written in Hebrew, Bet, Ayin, Lamed. This Ayin is frequently transferred to an O or an E, which means it's also Bel, which would be in a different spelling, Bet, Hey, Lamed. As the names of God frequently mean something about existence and life, it's easy to see that Bel could become Pel with a P, with the P and B swap, as a verb used by Homer, Pelo, spelled pi epsilon lambda omega, mixing up the names of letters between languages, Pelo, which means as a verb to be or to become or to come into existence. So this Pelo or Pel or Bel has the same meaning as Yod Hey Vav Hey, which is life or the self-existent, or the name Eve, meaning the same thing, life in Hebrew. So in the West, the ancient Britons had Belinus, which is a related name for a deity. And I want Dylan to talk about Apollo, Apulu, that whole thing, Pollux, as he gets into that in the book God's Acre for Winds of the Soul.
So I just wanted to show the audience what that version of bowl or bale that they say is spelled like. It's like basically bayit, which would be the B, ayin, which is the O, and lamed, which is the L. Now, when you see this ayin, a lot of times they transliterate it in something other than an O, but that is, if we're going to accept that Hebrew takes its alphabet from Phoenician, that represents O in Phoenician.
It has the same power of notation as the Omicron in Greek, 70.
It begets the Omicron, exactly. So there's no reason to ever translate that word with when it's spelled that way. Now, in Chaldean or Aramaic, it's just the Bayit Lamed, the B-L. So you can put in whatever you want there. But I just wanted to show people that, so when they see this stuff, they can, it becomes like a forensic exercise when you're trying to figure out how are all of these things interrelated, or how are they changing? And it's because things are getting added and removed or omitted, et cetera. So I just wanted to bring that out. Now, can you set me back up with what you wanted to talk about with Apu or Apollo?
Oh, yeah. Apulu? Just talking about that phonetic of the bell or the pell in Apollo and Pollux.
Yeah. So if you want, if you can bring up that slide with Apu, we can show people how it looks in Etruscan. But basically, in the plate that we have, it's just spelled A-P-L-U, Aplu. Sometimes you'll see people spell it with the U. Yeah, so if you were to see it on this plate, it'll be on the far left. It's the last letter, and people can always pause this and zoom in or whatever to really get it. But that's it. And it's from right to left, like Hebrew. Now, I think it's interesting because there's a region called Puglia, but it's prior to that, it used to be called Apulia in southeast, like the heel of Italy, of the boot, the southeastern part. And one of the things about this word is you can see that's where either Apollo comes from or Aplu comes from Apollo. I make the case because just based on the general consensus among scholars that in my opinion are the best, have done the best work and are respectable, when languages add more vowels, that's an improvement. So it indicates youth rather than antiquity. And so when you see languages with less vowels, it's older. And what was the other? AP is also AB, which is going to indicate father. So that's another thing to be mindful of, because the reason that letter P is so significant is that the Pelagians, at least as far as people are concerned in the past, are the ones who really started interchanging the B and the P. So that's just another thing to be aware of, because you'll see some parts of the world, the further east you go, you'll see that B, the B letter used. And the further west you go, you'll see it interchange with P. You'll also see it, especially in Italy, that B also interchange with V. And you see this in all, like even like Spaniards or Mexicans, people who speak Spanish today, they pronounce their letters with V. They pronounce like B, like vamanos, yo boy, like I go, instead of vamanos or yo voy. So that's something to get used to too. But once you're aware of this, these little techniques of transposition, everything starts to gel. And while we're here, the second name is Turan. And they say that is equivalent to Venus. Excuse me. Let me start over. The first letter is Laran, and they say that that's equivalent to the Etruscan Mars. This plate allegedly dates from the 3rd to 4th century BC. On the other slide, I have a vase that's in a German collection in Germany. And that one is like the 4th century BC. And you can see there is Mars. So this dating might be wrong, or it indicates the Etruscans were using Mars and Ladon. And they might be different archetypes, or they might both indicate this, you know, god of war. But the concern on this one would be that there's an extra vowel in the way Minerva is spelled, whereas usually you don't see that second E. It just is usually M-E-N-V-R-A or M-E-N-F-R-A, because they used the digamma back then. So it'll look like an F, but it's supposed to function like a V. And then in the ocean language or the Umbrian language, they use this symbol. It looks like this. It kind of looks like a kaf, but like with like straight lines. And it represents B. So Minerva, it's in the alphabet as the second letter. It represents B, but it functions like this. So you'll see like Minerva spelled like you'll see Minerva spelled something weird like that, where it's M-E-N-R-B-A. So it's really interesting. All these things, they all look different, but they're all coming from the same system. And once you get these little changes down, you can see it for yourself. So I'll let you jump in. And if you want to set me up for something because I didn't answer what you had in mind, you can take the glory for it.
Well, you might have more to say about it, but Pollux is also another really important deity that has the P-O-L. And, you know,
and is exclusive. So this is very important. Pollux and Castor are exclusive to Etruria. They did not come from Egypt. There's none of this stuff. It's exclusively from Italy. Potuce or Peltuque or Poduge, like that C might have functioned like a G. And Castor. Now, Castor is spelled with the K, so we definitely know that is it's spelled like this. And it's reversed, right? It's like going to be like something like Castor. And you'll have to forgive me. That's a U, and the R would be like that at the end of it. So Castor. So this is definitely a K sound, but in Poltuque, it's kind of, just to write it in English, Poltuque, it's spelled with a C, but the C wasn't introduced to Italian. The C functioned like a G in Italian alphabets prior to 230 BC. So Caesar was actually Gaius. Just little things to be aware of.
Wow. And there's a lot to think about with that. The way that you're spelling Poltuque makes me think of a poultice, which is for healing, you know, and these gods often have that quality to them. I feel like I could get us lost in the weeds with Castor and Pollux. So I'm just going to move us forward to getting into some of the etymology of the Pelasgi or Pelasgians. The Bishop Cumberland, in his work Origines Gentium Antiquissime, attempts for discovering the times of the first plantings of nations from 1794, says, "My opinion is that their name comes from the Greek pelogi. By inserting the letter S, which was usually done in ancient times, and such were the times when this name was first given." Bishop Cumberland goes on to give examples of this and then continues saying, "For I believe it only signifies that they were strangers that came by sea, pelagos, to settle more commodiously than they were before. So they might be adventurers of any tribe, family, or nation, or mixed of many that would agree to seek their fortune by shipping into another country." So first thing to note in the Greek word for sea, pelagos, is the logos. Just right there. That's a
big... And then with Pel, the Lord.
Exactly.
I mean, it literally is like the Jesus, the Mercury. It's so embedded in it. It's hard to tell what's real.
I know. It's amazing how our language is just dripping with the mythos. According to Mercilius of Lesbos, the Tyrrhenians obtained the names of storks or pelasgi because they depart and return again. This shows them to be sailors, according to him. Now, in modern Greek, to talk about pela, that means to go away, or means go away like a command. The etymology of storks is an interesting myth, but might not be accurate. The, I think it's Aristophanes has a whole play making fun of the etymology of the storks by basically it's like a comedy that pokes fun at the Greeks' belief that they come from storks, which is pretty funny.
I didn't know that. That's news to me.
Yeah. And the storks, like, so they're like dressed up as birds in the play, I think. And then the adolescent storks have to go make war in other nations to feed the adult storks. Otherwise they'll die. Something like that. I don't remember more than that. I forgot to put it in the notes, but
kind of sounds like a political commentary.
Yeah. Yeah. It's satire. Exactly. And making fun of the credulity of people to believe in that etymology when Pelagos is just right there. I mean, that's a way, which means sea, or it could also apply to a large river. The Latin Pelagius means sea bred or belonging to the sea. From this, Godfrey Higgins says that it is most likely that these sea people called themselves Pelasgi in their own country, and that the name referred to them. Higgins says it's most likely that these sea people did not call themselves Pelasgi in their own country, and that the name referred to them being sailors applied to them by there might not even be a country of them. It might just be a name for sailing adventurers, right? Or the natives whose shores they're landing on. But also like Betham, William Betham, I know you're a fan of him. He offers another etymological origin saying, quote, the discovery. Oh, and this is actually, I'm going to be quoting from a quote you put in your book, The Holy Sailors, here, where Betham says the discovery of the means of navigating by night induced these navigators to assume the honorable names of Pelasgi and Pelargi, or people who had so far advanced in the science of navigation as to be able to proceed by night as well as by day. This discovery is celebrated in the Eugubian tables, in which, if the tables refer to Etruscan voyagers, they are called Puni or Phoenicians, and much exultation is expressed on the occasion of the wonderful discovery. Both words have the same import. B or bay, which is night. Las is light. Goy or gi, people. Bella, day. R, steering. Goy or gi, people. That is navigators by night and day. The letter P is used in the more ancient tables for B, but it is scarcely necessary to make use of arguments where the analogy is so very close. The Pelasgi were but Phoenician mariners who were to be found not only in Greece, but everywhere a ship could approach the coast of the Mediterranean. Like the English of the present day, their operations were different in different localities. In some, they had only factories, but where they found an eligible position and encouraging circumstances, they settled colonies, as in Italy, Gaul, and the British Isles. So, and
for those listening or watching, those letters, those phonetics he was using, those radicals, were Celtic. That's it. He was doing a Celtic etymology on the term. And that's all we're going to give you. So if you like what you hear, come subscribe. You can do it on Chance's Patreon or his YouTube. And then come over to me at greattide.substack.com. And members, we'll see you on the other side. This one's awesome. So thanks for watching.